by the dawn's early light, by all I know is right, we're gonna reap what we have sown.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Jackson Browne, who has written and performed some of the most literate and moving songs in popular music and has defined a genre of songwriting charged with honesty, emotion, and personal politics. He was honored with induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2004 and the Songwriters Hall of Fame in 2007. His debut album came out on David Geffen's Asylum Records in 1972, and since then he's released 13 studio albums and 3 collections of live performances. His most recent, Love is Strange, features David Lindley. Beyond his music, Browne is known for his advocacy on behalf of the environment, human rights, and arts education. He's the co-founder of the groups Musicians United for Safe Energy, NukeFree.org, and the Success Through the Arts Foundation, which provides education opportunities for students in South Los Angeles. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jackson Browne.
Thank you, Ian.
And was Gil Scott-Heron an influence on your music?
Well, I discovered him at a really, really crucial time in my music, yeah. His song, We Almost Lost Detroit, was the song we played all the time around the time we were planning the No News concerts in 1978. And to have a black voice, you know, speaking about the danger to people in Detroit, well, it's a danger to everybody, really, but it was very important to have a black voice speaking about nuclear power, because in general, black, it's not really on the radar, not really on black people's radar as much as one would think, especially because of proximity to the plant and everything. So I would say, yeah, he was really important to me.
So, but in a way, he was the precursor of rap. I guess there was the Last Poets who came
right out
in the 60s, but they, I think they...
Well, he was associated with them. I think actually they did some of his material, or in some way was associated with them. Well, they get a cover of The Revolution Will Not Be Televised.
Well, but as I say, this was, what, decades before anybody heard of rap?
Yeah, that's true.
So I was talking the other day, Jackson Browne, to an organizer, another benefit that we had recently for Ralph Nader's Public Citizen, a comedy benefit, a bunch of comedians performed here in Los Angeles. And we were talking about the notion that the media has let us down as citizens to the extent that in many ways we get our news now from a comedian, Jon Stewart.
Exactly. I mean, his audience has to be pretty well informed for them to think it's funny. They have to know something about what's going on to get the irony or to get the joke. They have to be pretty informed. So there's a fairly aware audience. Presumably, they get their information from place besides the television show. Yeah, but you're right. Colbert and Jon Stewart, I mean, they're really kind of they're much more popular source of information for most people than. And certainly not network news and from the, you know, mainstream.
Well, the fact that they don't have to mediate and they can juxtapose a politician's lie on Wednesday compared to what he said on Thursday,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But I was going to extend that to the notion that, you know, documentary filmmakers are making films about important issues that the mainstream media is not covering.
Right.
And I take it that the same impulse is driving you and other musicians to, you know, there's an old adage that art ends where politics begins. So it's a tough road to hoe, isn't it?
Yeah, I've been trying to slip songs past my audience, really sort of slip songs into, you know, a set full of songs about relationships or about love or about, you know, longing for one thing or another. You know, for my whole career, but in fact, it's got increasingly easier because I think people realize that the political songs are really a part of life. And if anything, some of these songs that were in some way controversial 30 years ago, you know, have proven themselves to be, you know, of merit, and people welcome them in my set now. But I don't think that, I mean, the comparison is completely apt because I don't think you have the kind of censorship. There's the censorship of the market. For sure, you know, I mean, there are people who think, oh, there's no point in singing a song about foreign policy if nobody knows what the policy is. You have an easier time singing about baseball contracts or what athletes are being paid. But no, the thing is really that I think songs have to be about what people know already. You know, they already have to know something about it to consider the song good.
Well, but in many ways, for example, the song that you wrote, For America, it's a very patriotic song. And one of the things that I find so extraordinary about America is the extent to which the political right has usurped and claimed patriotism. They've claimed, yeah. They've confiscated the Bible. They've taken their flag, the Bible. You know, you name it, and you know, it's refreshing to note.
Well, I was always allergic to that jingoism in the '60s, and I thought, you know, I wouldn't need to, you know, I wouldn't partake of that. But really, there comes a time when you do have to express your patriotism and remind people that, you know, there was that bumper sticker, "America, love it or leave it," and the responding bumper sticker was, "America, change it or lose it." You have to. I still believe that. I think if we don't change, we really are losing this country, and not because we're going to burn it down at all, but because it's being sold out from underneath it. It's been sold to the highest bidder, not just, I mean, at this point, you know, any foreign country can donate money to a PAC and influence our elections, you know, it's just, or just the fact that they hold so much of our debt. So, yeah, no.
Well, we got, you know, the 99% movement have introduced this very helpful dichotomy of the 1% versus the 99%, but
yeah.
What's particularly outrageous about this current election is that it's not the 1% that are buying the 2012 elections, it's the 0.00063%,
yeah.
A handful of billionaires. It's, yeah. I mean, it's amazing to watch.
Yeah, 20 people are going to spend 90% of the money in the election.
Again, I'm speaking with Jackson Brown, who is going to be appearing this Sunday, May the 6th, at a tribute, KPFK's Hero Awards and a tribute to Gil Scott-Heron.
I'm also, I'll be there to present an award to Fernando Pullum, who is an educator, a music educator, who has worked in South Central Los Angeles for 20 or 30 years. I mean, 22 years in the public schools and then in charter schools, and now he's got a community arts center, which is providing services to this community that is not provided by any of the schools, even the charter schools.
And this is this something that you've done through your foundation, Success Through the Arts?
That's right. That's right. We sort of formed to support his work when he was still in the public schools. And so we've had the experience of supporting him, you know, in the context of you know, he's been very successful all along. And so they made his high school that he taught at a music magnet. But they still, it's a very ungainly, and the supporting of the arts is the first thing to get cut. And what also happened in the LA Unified, in our experience, was that as soon as they realized that there were some fairly affluent people on the other side of town supporting the programs and adding to the programs, they actually began to cut services to those schools because they thought, oh, well, don't give it to them. They got somebody helping them already. You know, largely because there's such a paucity of funds for art. Arts are the first thing to get cut, when in fact it's the one thing that really motivates kids to show up and to do their best.
Well, I think that the fact that they're closing down libraries now, one-third of the parks and recreation budget's been cut and people have been laid off. Most of the swimming pools in Los Angeles this summer will be empty. I mean, it really starts to make you wonder about our quality of life and why it is that the public sphere is being impoverished while the private sphere, which has been rewarded. I mean, the people that crashed the economy in 2008 were rewarded by Main Street. And now, you know, they've turned their back on everybody. And we have a new form of capitalism, which is extracting wealth, not creating wealth.
I mean, I completely agree. This is the problem. And I think people are sort of held for ransom by the idea that if we didn't bail out the banks, the economy would crash. But I don't know what they're calling this. I mean, this is the economy has crashed around the world. And unfortunately, the Obama administration did not, you know, hold any kind of, it haven't the power to make them give people loans now. They're just hanging onto their money because they don't see it as safe to take a chance with their money and give people loans. I mean, it's crazy what's happening because I think it's all about the privatization of all of our financial system so that people are on their own. I mean, I think our country, in that regard, our country really has been sold. There is no sort of civil society that supports people. You get things because you're a citizen and because you do well and you're performing of your job adds to the whole. Everybody, it's separated out, like they've separated the casserole.
Well, and they've also made a virtue out of greed and a sin, if you will, out of altruism. I mean, the followers of Rand, you know,
that's right.
The guy
that's
doing the Republican budget, I mean, it's an extraordinary thing to you know, I don't think American capitalism is sustainable in the long run. They've moved from producers to predators. And
well, do you think that there's a capitalism that is sustainable? I mean, is there an example of a capitalism that works?
Well, I think there's an example of a political system that works, that regulates capitalism, and it's known as social democracy. I mean, everybody, you know, we all make the joke that the communists are great at distributing wealth but terrible at creating wealth, and the capitalists are great at creating wealth but terrible at distributing wealth. Yeah. So there's obviously got to be a middle ground there somewhere.
Yeah. So do you think it's for socialist countries like the Scandinavian countries that... I mean, what are the examples?
I mean, well, I think that, yeah, the social democracies. I mean, it's all of the northern European countries, Australia, New Zealand. Right next door, we have an example, Canada.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
And the thing that I'm astounded by is that most of our political arguments on the right are about taxes and paying too much taxes, but nobody makes the argument, wait a minute, what do we get back for our taxes? I mean...
Right. Nobody admits about, talks about the war. Nobody really talks about the war as a drain on this.
Right, well, that's...
society's resources.
Exactly, because it's right-wing welfare.
Yeah.
Right, you know, that and agribusiness and all the rest of it. And now, you know, Obama couldn't even get the Congress to agree to stop giving subsidies to big oil at a time when they're making record profits. I mean, it's an amazing time, Jackson Brown, to think that here we are, after all that's happened to us in the last few years, a one percenter is running for president, and, you know, the guy could actually get elected.
You have to take that very seriously, I suppose. I mean, I found myself in a really vociferous argument last night. We agreed on just about everything, but I think it comes down to whether or not you really think there's... I mean, I kept saying, like, what exactly is going to be the main difference between... you know, a continued Obama administration or Mitt Romney. And my friend said, well, it's the Supreme Court. But the Supreme Court has already sold us out. Maybe it is worthwhile to really fight to, you know, I mean, hope that Obama can change the balance of the Supreme Court. But, I mean, in so many ways, there's not a lot of encouragement looking at his performance in terms of the environment, in terms of secrecy in government.
Well, I suppose it's a choice between, you know, the hope that things could, you know, the certainty that things will get worse versus the hope that things might get better.
That's a good point to make. I think, you know, things can always get worse.
And really worse. I mean, one more...
Well, we have no idea how bad they can get, of course. I mean, we have it better than many places, and we're yelling about... I mean, in the United States, I mean, our... bad is, like, you know, quite a bit better than much of the world's, you know, the conditions that people live in and have always. I mean, I started to write a song about the Haitian earthquake, and it turned into a song about poverty. And ultimately, you wind up hoping for a fundamental change in the way humanity, you know, views its time in the world. But I think you have to have a certain amount of comfort to even philosophize about anything. By comfort, I don't mean comfort. I mean you have to have a certain amount of stability in your life.
Well, that's, you know, that's the tragedy with politics, and probably why a lot of people in this country vote against their interests. They simply don't have the time and the energy, working two jobs, etc., three jobs sometimes, to really pay attention. And, you know, we know that the billionaires are going to confiscate the airwaves for the next 6 months and pour out all kinds of poison relentlessly. So... it's not a very pretty picture. Tell me about what happened, I guess it was, what, last September when you were visiting Zuccotti Park? Because yesterday I covered May Day demonstrations by the Occupy movement in Chicago, New York, and in Los Angeles.
Yeah, I went to Zuccotti Park during the occupation, but I didn't sing there until about a week after they sort of expelled the occupiers. I was on tour, and you know, it was a pretty hard place to sing in anyway, although it was very... very illuminating to go there, especially the people's mic and the way in which they you saw people bustling around and working for this consensus. And matter of fact, that was still going on even after they shut it down. I mean, we went and sang in Zuccotti Park and sang largely to a small gaggle of occupiers and the press. And it was important to the Occupy movement that we continued to show up there and that they would continue to presence there. But in fact, they made it virtually impossible to get in there. I mean, we were able to get in by virtue of a sort of liaison with the police, and they escorted us in and escorted us out. And you know, it's very far from what it was during the occupation. But nonetheless, a few blocks away, there were offices full of people continuing to work on the general assemblies and the meetings and the various groups that have formed to communicate with each other. And I think there were three, you know, general assemblies were operating in three of the boroughs. So it's kind of invigorating, really, to do it. I finished the song that I've been working on for months and months in order to sing it at that. So I sang a verse tonight, and I wrote another verse the night before and sang it, and that's when it's on this Occupy, this album project that's coming out May 15th. But I think the most astounding thing is to see how it's blown up everywhere, and that people understood that they could go Occupy, you know, in their own town, in their own area, and that in many, many of these areas, I mean, that's so popular, you know, people really support what the occupiers are talking about. And if anything, it's the only criticism we ever hear is that, well, they're not as focused as you'd want, or they have to be more, you know, there has to be a list of demands and so on. I was going to write a song called The List of My Demands. That'd be fun.
Well, I would have thought Rock Me on the Water is a pretty appropriate song in a way. You know, the idea of the road is filled with homeless souls, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, every time.
And there's where the generosity is. I mean, those people who have nothing are always the ones that are the most caring and most giving, you know, the most, because they're up against it. And those people who have a lot of feel that they have a lot to lose, you know. Right. Well, somewhere in between the people that, and there, I think there are many, many, many Americans that are constantly doing things for the community. And those are the people that I think we can look to hope that this sort of the infrastructure, that we create an infrastructure, you know, through Occupy and through the various citizens groups. And there is that view that, I think that's Paul Hawking who said that, you know, he just regarded all the events of the last 50 years and as the greatest mass movement in the history of humanity. And what's gone overlooked because it seems to be fragmented, it seems to be all individual groups. But it's a huge awakening and a huge cry to address the ills that humanity is really facing, you know, which is poverty and disease and ignorance and warfare.
Well, just in closing, Jackson Brown, again, you'll be at this Sunday, May the 6th, you'll be appearing at the second annual KPFK Hero Awards and Tribute, a musical tribute to Gil Scott-Heron, and you'll be presenting the Music Education Award.
Yes,
to
the Hero Award to Fernando Pullum.
Fernando Pullum. Just in closing, it sounds like it's going to be a fun night, right? I mean, looking forward.
Yeah, I think it's going to be amazing, and I'm not even sure who all is playing.
Charlie Hayden.
There'll be a lot of music and
Jack Black's going to be there, John Densmore, Charlie Hayden, a whole bunch of people. So,
I'm excited that Jack Black will be there. I haven't seen him at a KPFK event before, but Charlie Hayden, certainly John Denver's, you know, a real stalwart. And John Trudell's going to be there. I can't wait to see what he does. I think there's going to be a presentation. I think they're presenting Pete Seeger with an award. And so it's amazing. It's a celebration of our cultural heroes and the people who are really working in the community, shed some light.
Right.
You know, I think it's really important that we see who's here and then, you know, and working for an equitable, sustainable future.
Well, Jackson Brown, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thanks for having me.
Hello again, I'm Ian Masters. I'm just speaking then with Jackson Brown, who has written and performed some of the most literate and moving songs in popular music and has defined a genre of songwriting charged with honesty, emotion, and personal politics. He was honored with induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2004 and the Songwriters Hall of Fame in 2007. His debut album came out on David Geffen's Asylum Records in 1972, and since then he's released 13 studio albums and 3 collections of live performances. His most recent, Love is Strange, features David Lindley. Beyond his music, Brown is known for his advocacy on behalf of the environment, human rights, and arts education. He's a co-founder of the groups Musicians United for Safe Energy, NukeFree.org, and Success Through the Arts Foundation, which provides educational opportunities for students in South Los Angeles. And on this coming Sunday, May the 6th, he'll be appearing at the second annual KPFK Hero Awards and a musical tribute to Gil Scott-Heron. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can contact me, and I'll be back again on Sunday at 11 with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.